5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is the Electric Drum, and today I'm with Orlando Cordero, or Cordero, which one? Which
either one is fine.
Okay,
Cordero, Cordero. Yeah.
Sometimes people get, you know, they get ethnic with it. Orlando is from the New Haven community, right? Born and raised.
Born and raised, yes. Born and raised in the Hill neighborhood, and currently living in the Dwight neighborhood. But yes, longtime New Havener.
Okay, talk a little bit about growing up.
Well, growing up, I grew up in the Hill. This is more like history nowadays. The old Cinque Green housing projects is no longer there, but that's where I was born and raised, grew there first. And when I was about 5 or 6 years old, we just still stayed in the Hill, but just moved a few blocks away, still stayed in the Hill. Grew up there, went to the public schools, you know, went to Hill Central, Roberto Clemente.
Do you grow up with mom and dad or just mom?
Both. I had both parents, you know.
What are their names? Come on.
Yes, mom is Ruth. My mom and my dad is Marcelino. The Cordero family is a big family. For those people who might not know, three brothers, Cordero brothers, married three Velez sisters. And from that came about a 38, 39 children, and from there the generations conclude. You know, I think we're four generations in the New Haven, Connecticut area, but we've spread out across Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Jersey. We've gone everywhere from Florida. You know,
tell me a little bit about Ruth. What type of woman?
Mom has been a wonderful woman. Again, you know, God bless her. We still have her. You know, my parents are both in their mid 70s. She's the oldest girl of nine, so she's number four of nine children. So she was the mom to a lot of her sisters. She's been a great mother. We were born and raised in church. My old home church is the Star of Jacob Christian Church, or in Spanish, the Estrella de Jacob, right there on Howard Avenue. That's where I grew up. That's where I got my roots, so to speak, my religious roots. And, you know, grew up on the straight and narrow, and I believe that having both mom and dad in, you know, in the house kind of kept me on the path
to where I got to. So you got any stories about mom growing up that you recall that, you know, when you try to, you know, misbehave, she put you back in line? Or
I think mom was more the nurturer, but dad was the disciplinarian. So yeah, having, when you have a father, you know, sometimes having that, I think, a good fear of, well, if I don't do things right, you know, and mom tells dad, I'm going to get it. But you know, it was a good, you know, I believe, you know, we had a good upbringing, you know, but dad was more the disciplinarian. He was, you know, mom was more the nurturer. So I get my work ethic and, you know, trying to do the best I can from my dad. And I got my empathy and compassion from my mom, you know, so that's kind of what the recipe is for me.
Out in your community, you're providing both. Growing up, our parents do a good job of hiding poverty, of not letting us know that they're really hard times. Was that the case for you also?
I know that when I was born, my mom stopped working to take care of my sister, who's a little bit older than I and myself. So it was really mainly on my dad. And so, you know, my dad was a hard worker. He, you know, back in those days, being a tool and die maker, it was a big trade in Connecticut. It's still a big thing, but not so much here because that manufacturing base is no longer in Connecticut. But, you know, he kept us going. And, you know, that's, you know, we didn't have everything we wanted, but we had everything we needed, so to speak. You know, and then, you know, we got blessed and got a little lucky when we moved from the projects in Church Street South, we found a house for the price of a down payment. It was basically the price of the house. And it was a fixer-upper. My dad and his cousins and family, you know, we had an electrician in the family and all that. And all of a sudden, we were able to have a house where, you know, it was first the four of us, then the five of us with my younger brother, Noel. And then ultimately, it was a family of six when Alberto was born. So it was tight, but we made do.
I'm sure Jose Cordero showed up every once in a while to work on the house.
Yeah, we had a Jose. We had a bunch of Eggers. We had Pagans, and we had Rosarios. So we have a lot of family members. Yeah.
Sense of community growing up was different for you, right? I mean, you were in the first Star Jacob, second Star, first Star.
Star Jacob, right?
Star Jacob,
one.
Okay.
The first one, right. So, yeah, no, so that was good. I mean, that was a good sense of community because, again, you got a chance not only within, we had a big family, we had a large extended church family. And again, if, you know, for those folks who are from New Haven, you know, there's three or four big families, you know, in each church, and there's other smaller families in it. But it was a great time growing up. You know, again, there's your faith, there's what you see in the streets, and then what you see in school. But I believe that, you know, again, the church was another family away from the nuclear family or for the extended family.
Seeing this amount of support throughout your life, did you feel like ever like you needed or acknowledgement or someone to advocate for you, or was there someone who was there?
I believe that there was always someone there whenever there was a need. So whether you, obviously, the basic needs, you know, I think my parents met them, right? You know, never had to really advocate on, I need this, you know, I need to be fed, I need to be clothed. And we, thank God, we never had that type of issue growing up. In school, you know, I was, you know, I did the best I could, you know, and my mom was always made sure that I was on top of it. I got the support in school, you know, again. And sometimes it takes those teachers to kind of see something in you to say, you know, this kid's got something in him, and they push me towards, you know, the more difficult, more challenging academic courses. And again, that led me ultimately to getting into, you know, a few good schools, one of them being Yale, where I went to for undergraduate.
Before we get there, so where do you go to elementary?
Well, I went to Hill Central.
Okay.
But they're on DeWitt for... I went to Roberto Clemente Middle School.
Yeah, you
know,
okay.
We know that place very well.
Yes, we do.
You know, that was a great, you know, great times. You know, Carl Babb was one of the principals there.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, he still contacts me, and we still stay in touch either through Facebook or just by calling each other.
We know Carl Babb here on the drum. We've had him before.
Yeah. So again, he's one of those great people in this community who he's seen a lot of us, you know, move forward, and I'm sure he's probably going to listen to this, and he's going to say, I heard you on the drum, you know. But yeah, and then from there, I went to Career High School. So I didn't go to Cross or Hill House, but I went to Career High School. This is back before they are in their big school at Legion mm-hmm. Avenue. I was in the Conti School, which is now a middle school or elementary school down near, our Little Italy section.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wooster Square, yes, yeah. Yes. You said some of these teachers pushed you. Do you remember who or recall some? I mean, Carl Babb, one of them.
Well,
but
in middle school, you know, you always remember your first teachers, like, you know, like the Mrs. Hyders from kindergarten. And in middle school, we had a few good teachers. There was in high school, I can remember the teachers who really helped a lot. I had Dr. Sarasso, but Mr. Sarasso was our English teacher. He then became a principal. We had my independent study teacher, Mrs. Chang, was very influential. She was the one who kind of sat me down one day and said, Orlando, I think you have what it takes, and I think you should apply to, you know, whatever schools you want to, you know, and that she helped me out. And John Crotty, shout out to Mr. Crotty, he's in Florida now, but he was a math teacher, and he taught us, if anyone knows that old movie, Stand and Deliver, he was our white version of James Olmos's character of Jaime Escalante. So he taught us. And, you know, again, it's those people that you'll always remember, the people who really cared about the students, who wanted you to excel and pushed you to be the best you can.
Wow. Wow. Is there one thing that you hear in the back of your mind when you're thinking about community service that comes like with your mom? Like, is there like an ethic or upbringing that, that sticks to you?
It's a combination of mom and church, right? You know, again, we want to do our best to help our fellow men, right? You know, we always want to be there for each other. And I think, you know, when you in church, when we did community service, whether that's doing, you know, little food drives or soup kitchens, you know, where people came in, you fed them, you know, you also evangelized to them, you know, growing up in a Pentecostal church, that was a big thing, evangelizing. So you got going out there and doing that, but also just being able to help people, because again, you got to meet people where they are, you know, to get them, you know, to get them and improve their lives, whether it's their lives in terms of what they need, whether it's their physical needs being met, whether they need clothing, whether they need shelter, whether their spiritual needs being met, you know, if, you know, on that level. But I think it's important that giving back and doing things, you're doing it because you're doing it not just for yourself, but for your community. And, you know, if you believe in the higher purpose, you know, you believe that you're doing this, you know, you're doing God's work. You're doing it for the kingdom.
Mm. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Canelaro. This is Orlando Cordero talking about, and you said something very important, meeting people where they are. Can you just talk a little bit more about that? Because people think that providing resources and, you know, why don't people just take advantage of everything where they, you just don't know if they're even, they're, it's important to see that their basic needs are met.
Right. I do agree. I believe that you have to meet their basic needs, you know, because otherwise how are they going to move beyond that? Like some people, when we've all heard the term paycheck to paycheck, but sometimes hand to mouth might be, you know, more appropriate in certain communities where people just don't know what they're going to eat that day, or people just don't know where they're going to get their next dollar, whether they're going to work at a job that may or may not hire them because they don't have the transportation to get there, or, you know, they've been late because of the public, you know, the buses they have to get to. You know, so in terms of meeting people where they are, I think that you have to meet their basic needs in order for them to see and find their potential within themselves to be greater than where they are. I mean, I think that's kind of an important thing, because once they get their feet under them, you can see those who will want to aspire to do more, they will. And for those who, you know, they might be just happy living their life, but they have their basic needs met. Not everyone has to be the overachiever, but people, you want people to have a good quality of life, whatever that may look like for them.
Hmm. Thank you so much. And so let's go back to Yale University. You're an undergrad. How did you navigate that? Who helped you out financially? Because this is your first gen, I'm
first
assuming.
First generation. Yep, college, yeah.
How was it? Share that experience, please.
Well, Yale was a good experience overall, I'd have to say. There were good times and bad times, but overall I would say it was a great experience. I think the major sources of help for us, and let's just talk about the financial aid aspect of it. You know, I did get some scholarships. There is a family, Meyer and Michael Schaefer are these, we could say were my main benefactors. I was a Jacob and Bessie family Schaefer scholar and a Sterling scholar. These are just designated scholarships that the school gives, some of them to local kids. So I was one of those few New Haven public school kids that year. Again, talking about more than myself, there were 9 public school kids from the New Haven public schools who got into Yale in 1992. 8 of us decided to go to Yale. The other one went to Stanford, but, you know, but it gets good turnout. And, you know, that was good. And so I already had the immediate kind of like, hey, at least I can point out to 7 other students who I went to school with, you know, not in my own high school, but within the school system, because we all knew each other. There is, back then in the 90s, again, dating ourselves here, you know, from 92 to 96 is where I went to Yale. Yale had the Latino Cultural Center, Casa Cultural Julia de Burgos, named after a Puerto Rican poet.
Crown Street.
On Crown Street, yep, there you go. And we, you know, that was a good place where a lot of Latinos would meet and congregate and give support, whether it's helping people, whether it's tutoring, or, you know, and there's also places where that was our focal point, where we would go and say, let's do some community service in this neighborhood. So whether it was being a big sib to a kid in the Dixwell neighborhood, I remember doing that my first and second year. I was a big sib to a group of kids whose mom was HIV positive, and you know, it's hard knowing that, hey, that mom can not be here for a while, but we do know that there are other people that we can lean on, you know, and that's something, some of the things that I used to do when I was an undergrad. I spent a lot of time at La Casa. The Latino Cultural Center is, you know, commonly known as La Casa, and the African American Cultural Center, the AFAM, is known more as the House. So I was a frequent flyer to both the House and La Casa, and actually worked as a student monitor, student manager at the Cultural Center at on Crown Street. So it was a good place, and again, it was the best of times because I didn't really realize, wow, I'm not the, you know, in, coming from a all minority school or, you know, system like New Haven, you go to an all majority school like Yale, but then you find that there are other people like you from other places around the country that you can kind of, you know, bond with and kind of, you know, trudge the journey along. So
sometimes when we're put in these situations to navigate, we suffer from like imposter syndrome. Like we feel like we don't belong.
Yes. I can relate. Yes. So
please.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes again, you're going to school. You were the best of, let's say your school system, but then you're going to school with some kids who, you know, went to the big schools like the Exeters and, the John Hopkins and these big, you know, boarding schools and national schools that have a national reputation that are kind of like the feeder schools into the Ivy Leagues. And so you kind of feel sometimes a little bit inadequate when you're like, these kids have sometimes what our classes during freshman year, they had that junior and senior year in high school. We're seeing it for the first time our freshman year, you know? We're kind of a little bit behind the curve at times, but again, this is where leaning on your fellow classmates and those who were sophomores and juniors to help kind of help you progress was helpful, you know? So after a while you feel, you know, you see the struggles. Once you see you're struggling along with them, you feel like, you know what? It's hard, but it's hard for everybody. And so you kind of get a sense of belonging. Yes, I do belong here, you know?
But it took a while to get there.
It took some time to get there. I think it started clicking more in my second year, in my sophomore year. It's like, wow, you know, freshman year was rough. You know, I can say, you know, wasn't that I never flunked a class, but I, you know, there were a couple of classes where I'm like, woo, you know, if I was under the old school with my dad, you know, I'd probably be, grounded are the things that kids do get nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, back in our days, you know, getting a butt whipping was what we got. thank goodness I passed that age, but you know, never fail. But you know, I went from being a C student to being a B plus A minus student by the time I was, you know, I was a junior and senior.
Oh, okay. So it's not easy for everyone.
No.
Do you feel at times that maybe some institutions such as the New Haven Public Schools can do a little bit better job at preparing?
I believe so. I mean, again, sometimes a lot of times people teach towards exams, like the standardized tests,
yeah,
versus really getting into the subject matter. I think that there's a good balance. You know, again, we need to teach so that people are exposed and know how what the test is like, but also, you know, focusing on the subject matter. It is hard. I mean, again, school education is obviously one of those things that help people move socioeconomically, mm-hmm, you know, but also enriches your life. So sometimes there's people who they read, they may never go to college, but they, you know, so having access to a lot of information, you know, back in New Haven, it was all like, you know, the basics, you know, your English, your math, you know.
I mean, they don't even teach cursive anymore.
Right. Well, yeah, old school writing nowadays. Right. But besides the cursive, it's more like when you went to, I went to, again, Yale's a liberal arts school, but it's a university. So you have higher sciences than just, you know, chemistry and biology. You know, it's molecular biophysics and biochemistry and, you know, cellular biology, you know, and, you know, advanced calculus. You know, like, again, if kids who are good in math, you'd be lucky to get into AP calculus by senior year. You know, and again, you go in there, some of your colleagues or your classmates who are also freshmen, they're in third semester calculus their first year. And here you are kind of doing first semester or second semester calculus. Or just history. Like we're just taught U.S. history, right, in our public school system, but nobody really gets into world history. No one really gets into
geopolitics
or Latin American history or mm-hmm. European history. And that those doors really opened up my eyes in college. Because again, I thought I was going to be a science major. I thought I was going to be an engineer when I first got to Yale. And you know, yeah, I took my calculus and I took my science classes, but besides them being hard, it's like it really wasn't interesting anymore. You know, but then I took an introduction to Latin American studies and learned a lot about the history of European history or Latin American history, and you know, things of all up to like the modern day, and that was the survey class to get in. And all of a sudden I said, you know what, I want to be a Latin American studies major. And so here I am learning the history of, you know, a lot of South American countries, Mexico, our own history of Puerto Rico, which is very unique, you know, given the fact that, you know, we were never really our own independent nation, given we were a colony of Spain. And then after the Spanish-American War, here we are being a territory of the U.S. and still are to this day. But, you know, that's a whole subject for a whole other day.
That's a whole different drum. Yes. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Orlando Cordero, lawyer. Esquire. Okay. I mean, we're going to touch this one real quick. When you do study about your history, it gives you, help you with a sense of identity,
yes.
Which we, in that kind of environment, we can get lost,
mm-hmm.
but you found yourself within that.
Yes. I mean, I think it's important because, again, knowing your history, knowing where you come from kind of helps you figure out where you're going or where you want to head. Because sometimes, you know, if you go by the statistics of our communities, you know, we're supposed to not be college graduates. We're not supposed to go and become lawyers and doctors and nurses and go into politics or do anything like that. But, you know, knowing your place and knowing that you have the opportunity and the ability to help your community, to elevate your community, that is important. So my decision, you know, I've kind of become not radicalized, but, you know, my eyes were open in undergrad.
You're radicalized.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my okay. eyes were open. Like, this is what it is to be Puerto Rican in this country. And these are the things that are stacked against
suffrage.
You.
This is the suffrage that took place for me to get here.
Right, exactly. Knowing your history, how I got here, and then what doors are open to me and what doors do I need to, like, knock on really hard or get my foot in the door or sneak in through a window or a back door, you know, to do this. And I had a couple of jobs after graduation, but before I went to law school, I worked for the city of New Haven. And again, so, you know, I'm only 51, but I think I've done a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. you know, at this mm-hmm. point in my time. I worked for a nonprofit. I worked for a for-profit. I worked for the city of New Haven for about 3.5 years. The first position was working for the Office of Legislative Services, which is the Board of Alders office.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a little bit of that. And then I switched over to the executive side and worked in the chief administrator's office, officers, as a management analyst. And so learned a lot about policy, about government. And in my time in the city of New Haven, I met a lot of attorneys, not just in their corporation council where, you know, they deal with contracts and, you know, slip and falls in city, you know, those type of things in litigation. But I learned a lot of lawyers who did lobbying and who did policy work. And I said, you know what? I may not want to be a traditional lawyer, but maybe, you know, crafting policy and legislation, which would be helpful to people like myself and our communities, is something where I'd want to go and do that. And I thought about getting a master's in public policy or public administration or getting a law degree. But I kept on asking the lawyers, well, why is it that you decided to do this instead of, you know, mm-hmm. and getting your JD, your law degree, rather than going and get a master's in public policy or administration? And they said, you know what, if you get your master's, you can do policy. But if you get your law degree, you can do policy and practice the law and understand law. And you see things at a different level. And just understanding how certain decisions, how they impact people, and being able to advocate for those people who are disparately impacted by certain decisions. And we all know, as we see in this government now, how things can benefit a few, but at the expense of the many.
Where did you get your law degree?
I went and I got my JD from Boston University School of Law out there in Boston. So it was 3 years. I did live up in Boston. So I've been a lifelong Connecticut person, but I did live up there for those 3 years, and you know, I'd obviously come back to New Haven, but Boston was an interesting town too, you know. But it was a great time. It was a good education, and I came back to Connecticut.
Was did Yale prepare you for Boston? I mean, you're pretty successful there.
Right. Well, going to Yale opened my eyes. Going to the, you know, predominantly white institutions, right? The PWIs, you know. So Boston University is kind of similar to that. So that was less culture shock for me than when I went from the public school system in New Haven to Yale. Mm-hmm. But definitely,
you were able to navigate it.
I was able to navigate it way better, you know. And so I think that definitely helped prepare me. And I went when I was a little bit older. I didn't go right after undergraduate. Mm. So I went, I think I was 27 when I started law school. So I graduated when I was 30 from law school. So had a little bit of work experience, life experience under my belt before going to law school, which is something I would probably recommend for people if you're not 100% sure what you want to do. If you want to be a doctor, just go straight through. But if you want to do something else, business school, law school, or anything else, I'd say take a couple of years, a year or two, to really get some life experience. Because again, what you learn in the classroom and what you think you know, you're going to learn what you really know and don't know once you live and work with people who may not share the same values and opinions, and then you see what you're up against, so to speak.
So you go ahead and you graduate from you come back, you take the bar here?
Yes. So, yep. So every state you take a bar exam. So I took the bar exam in July of 2004 when I graduated that year. And thank God, passed the first time around. And so, you know, I got sworn in the year after. I did a clerkship for the Superior Court here in Connecticut. But then after that, got sworn in 2005 and been a lawyer since.
And for those who are not familiar with law, since you took one of the hardest bar exams in the country, you can practice literally anywhere, I think, except California,
well,
New York.
I think the way it works is the certain states, depending on what bar exam you take, you have what they call reciprocity. So let's say I could wait, if I took the Connecticut bar and passed, I could waive into another jurisdiction like Illinois or Georgia, let's say, and not have to take their bar exam. But there are other states like the New York bar exam, the California bar exam, you'd have to take that all over again. Mm-hmm. So there are states where you have reciprocity and some where you don't. So you got to know this the law of the state in which you practice. So
okay,
I'd have to, if I wanted to, let's say, practice in New York, I'd have to take the New York bar.
You currently work at
Statewide Legal Services of Connecticut, which is a local nonprofit legal aid organization. You know, our mission is to obviously help people get the legal information they need to help themselves with whatever legal problem that they might have. We mainly deal with a lot of civil legal aid issues. So we may not do immigration work. We don't do criminal law, but we do things in housing, public benefits and family, unemployment and bankruptcy. So those are the areas of law that we help with. We're kind of, I guess, formed just like you have the United Way has 211, where a lot of people call mm-hmm. in and get information and resources. We're kind of structured kind of the same, where people call the legal aid hotline and they can get an opportunity to talk to an attorney or another advocate about these issues. So whether they're going through an eviction, they're moved out and their landlord doesn't want to return their security deposit for some reason, they're going through they may not have been married, but they have a child custody or a visitation or a child support issue, whether they have their applying for disability and they're being denied, or they get benefits through the Department of Social Services and are being denied, and we can help them appeal those things. And in certain situations, in some cases, we can refer these cases to other legal aid organizations, like here locally, the New Haven Legal Assistance Association, Greater Hartford Legal Aid, or Connecticut Legal Services. So they are kind of like our sister legal aid organizations. So we're kind of like the funnel or the triage of legal aid for the state, so to speak, where they come to us first. We're able to refer certain cases, but sometimes we're the only assistance they get, and they can call us back at different stages of their matter. So whether they're kind of needing coaching for their eviction case, or you know, they applied for disability, we tell them how to appeal. But if they get denied again, then we have the opportunity to say, you know what, at this stage in your case, we're able to refer you to an attorney who can help you. And they're obviously more successful with an attorney getting their, you know, disability benefits than they are if they have to go about it on their own.
Was the contact information? You got a phone number?
Yes. The Legal Aid Hotline, if you need your any assistance with housing, family, public benefits, bankruptcy, or let's say, and those things like that. We don't do immigration or criminal law. It's 1-800-453-3320. The hotline is available from Monday through Friday, except holidays, from 9 to 12 and from 1 to 3. Little hint, if you start calling, it's an automated system. Start dialing at 855 so you can get in there, you know, first thing.
There's a waiting list for everything.
Yes.
In regards to, you're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Orlando Cordero. We can also talk about healthcare. One of your passions is the Cornell Scott Hill Health Center here in New Haven. Your work there is very important. What would you like the audience to know about the Hill Health Center? Where is that in the future?
Right. Well, for those who may not know, the Cornell Scott Hill Health Center has been around for more than 55 years now. I believe it's like 57, going on 58 years. Our Cornell Scott, or Scotty as he was known, was one of the founders. The healthcare center movement was a big thing back in the 60s and into the 70s. And we're fortunate to be an organization or a healthcare center that's able to provide healthcare to those who are most, who are the most underprivileged. Again, you know, we talked about earlier about food deserts, and there's not a lot of healthcare or foods supply for the average person. The Cornell Scott Hill Health Center is one of those healthcare centers that's in the community. We have over 26 sites, you know, which include our branches in New Haven, West Haven, in Ansonia. We also have school-based health clinics where we're able to give, you know, the main thing with an FQHC, a federally qualified health center, provides is basically, you know, you have your medical, you have behavioral health and dental. And these are the standard things that we hope all people take advantage of. And people should know that whether you're insured or not, if you're insured, obviously we would see you. If you've got Husky through the state, we'd see you. If you have your own insurance through Access Health, or even if you're uninsured, we try our best to help everybody get the health care that they need. And we do so with a sense of compassion into the community. So it's very important. I've served on the board since 2013. So I kind of started just around the time that our current CEO, Michael Taylor, started his tenure as the CEO. So I've seen the progression from where we were back in 2013, where we were doing okay, but not great. And all of a sudden we've grown immensely. One of the things that we have is the Recovery and Wellness Center, which has opened its doors just this past year, where we help people fight substance abuse issues. And we actually have residential beds for both men and women. And I don't think there's many places that have both for men and women in that regard. So we've grown a lot. And I'm proud to be a part of the board. As you know, yours truly is starting. So we thank you, Jose, for starting to serve on our board. And we hope to do good things moving forward.
With that said, I think that one of the things that you mentioned is that you're willing to see people even if you're uninsured.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's something, if you aren't insured, and this happened to be something where I remember back in when I first started my solo practice before working where I am now, I didn't have insurance. And so this is when the Affordable Care Act first started coming out. This is the year right before the Affordable Care Act, the exchanges were created. So I had to find a place to see somebody. And obviously I used to come to what was then the Hill Health Center when I was a kid. This is where I got my vaccine shot, so to speak. Now, as an adult, I came back and said, you know what, let me see these folks for my primary care. And again, primary care is preventative care. And you hope that gives you at least a base level quality of life. You know, if your general health issues are managed and maintained, you're able to be a lot more productive in your life.
There you go. Thank you so much for your time. I normally give a last word before we go. You to the community. Mr. Cordero.
Well, again, what I would say is for those of you in the New Haven community, you know, don't lose hope. Keep moving forward. Do the best you can. Get the help you need, whether it's legal issues, whether it's your health, whether it's your spiritual health. You know, there are people out there. Don't despair, even though that things may look bleak. There is hope out there, and reach out to those organizations and those beacons of light in your community to help you move forward.
Thank you very much. This has been the Electric Drum of 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This has been the words of Esquire.
Just Orlando's fine.
Orlando Cordero. So much. So thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it. And to my general public out there, like always, guys, thank you for listening.